Okay, I can see you all on the screen. Yes. Vancha kalpatarubhayascha kripa sindubhevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Please accept my humble obeisances to all the Vaishnavis of ICC Bangalore. All right, so I've been given this topic of speaking on Mother Aditi. So today's discussion will be mainly from Srimad Bhagavatam. So primarily we all know that Mother Aditi is the mother of Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know how in her previous birth she was Prishni. We know how Kashyap and Aditi were Prishni and Sutappa, and how later in Dwapar Yuga they come again as Devaki and Vasudev. And we all know that she is among the 13 daughters of Prajapati Daksha, and her children are all the demigods, and they are also known as Adityas. And we know about Kashyap Muni also, how he is a son of Marichi, and Marichi who is a son of Brahma. Mainly we see that her reference is drawn in Bhagavatam in connection with her earrings, which Narakasur robs, and then Krishna goes and gets them. And she's also the main protagonist in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, where we see she does this payovrata. So if you see the how it goes in Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto onwards, we see in the purport Srila Prabhupada is mentioning how when Krishna kills Narakasura, and then Satyabhama and Krishna, they go to Indrapuri. And at that time, it is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada that Aditi is the one who takes around Satyabhama to see the Indrapuri on a sightseeing tour. And then we again see in the second canto, she is mentioned in the third chapter, where Srila Prabhupada talks about it. It is actually in a sloka where it is mentioned that if somebody wants to have a good marriage, then they worship Uma, Lord Shiva's wife. And if somebody wants to have a beautiful wife, then they worship Urvashi. In that same context, it is mentioned that if somebody wants to have a godown full of grains, then they worship Mother Aditi. So our taking up this topic of Mother Aditi during this lockdown period is very rightful, because if we want our kitchen godown full of grains at this time of groceries, then we pray to Mother Aditi. So in that context, it is mentioned about her in the second canto. And then in the third canto, fifth canto, sixth canto, she is mentioned regarding the earrings which were robbed, and also about progeny, about her children, especially about Aryama, how he takes the place of Yamaraj, and about Indra. And then again she's been talked about in the 10th canto, where this Govardhan Leela happens, and when Indra comes with Surabhi to pacify Krishna. And at that time it is mentioned in the sloka that because of the instructions of Aditi, or under the guidance of Mother Aditi, Indra directs Airavat to hold the Ganga water in his trunk and pour it on Krishna. So that also shows us one quality of a mother. As a mother of Indra, she rightly guided Indra to pacify Krishna or serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then again we see her mentioned in the 11th canto, where Krishna says that among the Adityas, or among the sons of Aditi, I am Vishnu. But having said all, among all the cantos, the main a canto where she is very much in detail discussed, or we talk about her, is 8th canto. And this comes in context with when Bali Maharaj loses the battle and he dies. And then when he dies, he's brought back to life by Shukracharya. And then Bali Maharaj, with the guidance of Shukracharya, goes ahead and does yajna and lots of other activities to please the brahmanas. And then as a result, he regains his strength. And then he actually challenges Indra. He tries to he goes to Indrapuri and try to attack them. But even before he enters Indrapuri, we know that Indra is so much overwhelmed by Bali's prowess and the way he looks. So he goes and asks his guru, what are we supposed to do? Looks like Bali is, you know, come back with his lost strength. And then Brihaspati guides Indra that this is not the time to fight with Bali. You all should change your forms and hide somewhere, and we'll work it out what we can do next. So at that time, Indra and all the other demigods, they change their form and then they all hide somewhere. And they're practically homeless and, you know, hiding here and there. And then Bali Maharaj occupies Indrapuri. Now in this context, the whole chapter starts how Aditi is very sad, being the mother of the demigods, her children are homeless. So the whole ashram and the whole ambience of the ashram is very sad. And then Kashyap Muni walks in and then starts a beautiful conversation between Kashyap Muni and Aditi. And I thought it was so appropriate for us to discuss this conversation, especially all the more because we are in this discussion is happening in a Vaishnavi forum, because we are all grihasthas and the whole discussion out there is about grihastha ashram, the rules of grihastha ashram, how can you know, grihasthas be happy and progress in Krishna consciousness. So I thought we will take up today this as the base of our discussion, and then we'll read out one sloka and then we'll go discussing on it. So if you have your Bhagavatams, you can open the 8th canto and we can go to directly to this chapter of Payovrata, process of worship, because there Mother Aditi is the main protagonist. So here we see the sloka begins like this. We are here, Canto 8, Chapter 16, Sloka number 2. Ekada kashyapatasya ashramam bhagavanagat nirutsavam niranandam samadhe viratashchirat. After many, many days, the great powerful sage Kashyap Muni arose from a trance of meditation and returned home to see the ashram of Aditi, neither jubilant nor festive. So the whole chapter starts like this, how the whole ashram is very dull and everybody is very sad, and then Kashyap Muni walks in. When I was reading this sloka, one thing just came in my mind, and this word he says that chirat, after long time, samadhir viratas chirat, after long time Kashyap Muni came to the ashram or to Aditi back. And I was thinking, this is one thing that we can contemplate. See, Kashyap Muni, he had almost like 17 wives, so many children, but he still had time to go for samadhi for such a long time. And I thought this was something, because Kashyap Muni is actually, he is like the father of the whole creation. I mean, his wives, I mean, have given birth to animals, reptiles, snakes, birds. He's almost the father of the whole creation. So with so many wives and so many children, he's not a sannyasi, he's a grihastha. And he still had time, he still gave time to go and do tapasya. And I thought this is something we should learn from, because we always have this complaint as grihasthas. Though we have just one, I mean, there's just, everybody has just one wife, and nowadays especially everybody has either one or two maximum children, but still they don't have time for Krishna consciousness. This is the only complaint they are making. So where are we going wrong? How come those people had so much time? Does it mean that we are not organized, or we are not able to organize our time properly? How come they got so much time to be in Krishna consciousness? How come they had time for everything? They were good grihasthas, they were good bhaktas, they were good preachers, they were just about everything. And how come we aren't able to do it? So I was just contemplating on this, and then something came to my mind. I thought probably because we don't have a goal, we are not focused, we're not sure what we want. Because if we have a goal, then nothing is that difficult. See, for example, if let's say somebody wants to go to a departmental store to buy, let's say, bread or cheese. It is as simple as that. You write it down. You want a bread, packet of bread, and you want cheese. You go to a departmental store. You buy bread. You buy cheese. You pay bill. And you come out. It's as simple as that. But if you are not sure what you want to buy, then it's a big process. You will go to the departmental store. You will spend 4-5 hours there. You will not know what to buy because you have not even decided what you want to buy. And you will keep moving from this rack to that rack, not knowing what to do. And if at that time, mercifully, looking at your confused face, if a saleswoman or a salesman, you know, walks up to you and says, "Can I help you?" You will not be even sure what to ask for because you haven't even decided what you want to buy because you have no list. So even if the person wants to help you, they can't help you. And I thought our life was something like this. We're not sure what we want. And that is why when a saintly person walks in our life and asks us, "Can I help you?" You know, when our guru walks in and they ask us, "Can I help you?" And we are like, "I don't know how you can help me because I'm not even sure what I want." So I was thinking, this is one thing because we're not having any fixed goal. We don't know what we want. Sometimes we become very serious in Krishna consciousness and sometimes we are just happy here. Sometimes when we get lots of trouble in this material world, Adi Devik, Adi Hatmik, Adi Bhautik, children are not listening, fighting with husband, in-laws giving problem. You know, when all that kind of problems come up, then we suddenly become so serious. I want Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan and chanting. But then when everything looks very settled in this material world, and then we again get relaxed. I think I'm fine. It's going well. We're not that serious. We're not sure what we want. We are confused. If sometime we hear a very inspiring lecture by somebody and we suddenly become so serious, "Oh my God, we need to go, we have to go back to Goloka Vrindavan." Our sadhana starts suddenly becoming very good. We start chanting rounds properly. We start, "I'm going to read Bhagavatam every day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that." We are all inspired. And then suddenly the other day, you go for some Graha Pravesh and you see somebody has a palatial house and a beautiful new Audi car, and then other moment you are inspired by something else, and then you suddenly start thinking, "Wow, maybe we can balance both the things together. Maybe we should earn money and be Krishna conscious at the same time." So many things come to your mind. So sometimes you are like this, or sometimes you want to go this way. It's so confusing. Our concepts are not clear. What we want is not clear. This our mentality is something like that of a child. I remember when we were young, I'm from a Pushtimarak Gujarati background. So Pushtimarak followers, Laddu Gopal followers, Gujaratis, they don't take onion and garlic. And those days, I'm talking like maybe 30 years back, there were very few Jain restaurants. So, you know, hardly get somewhere, you know, you'll get a Jain food. So I remember my uncle used to sometime take us to a restaurant on Sunday morning. You know, Minerva, I remember the hotel name. I remember as a child, we order for idli and then somebody else orders for masala dosa. The moment our order appears, very next moment you feel, "I should have ordered for masala dosa. That would have been nice." And the person who orders for masala dosa is thinking, "Oh, I should have ordered for idli." We are like child, so confused. I mean, though we are grown-ups now, we are confused. What do we want actually? Do we want to be serious in Krishna consciousness? Or we don't want to? See, the whole point is, there is nothing wrong in having desires. Where we're going wrong is, we are not accepting that this is our desire. That is where we are going wrong. It's nothing wrong if you accept that, "Look, I don't have a Krishna conscious desire," or rather, I'll put it, "I don't have a pure Krishna conscious desire. I want to be a good grihastha, happy grihastha, have a happy life." Nothing wrong in that. But you just need to accept it, that going back to Goloka is not your goal. But if you say something and then you do something, that is where the problem comes. The problem with us is, we say something publicly, but we want something else privately. So if there is a conflict between your inside and outside, then you will start the process of mask. You start wearing mask. you'll start wearing mask. And then when you start wearing mask, then the whole frustration starts, because there is no alignment between your internal and external. So nothing wrong in having a desire which is not very purely Krishna conscious, but at least we should accept it. Otherwise our problem is, we say we want to go here, but we actually go there. So if this is how it is, then it's not going to work out. So we need to decide, all right, my desire is not very Krishna conscious, but I want to be happy grihastha. I don't want to be bad to anybody. I want to be nice to people. I don't want to commit sinful activities. Very fine. Even if you are sincere about that one desire, you will slowly end up being Krishna conscious, because it's step by step. But if you desire something else and then you go something else, then it's a problem, right? See, like for example, let me prove it to you in a minute. I can see some of you on the screen. Tell me if I'm right. You can just raise your hand. You have heard about Shravan Kumar? Yes, I can see a hand now. You have heard about Shravan Kumar. Very nice. So we all like Shravan Kumar, right? I mean, he was so nice. I mean, he was so sincere. He took care of his parents so well. He was he's a dream son. He took them out for Tirtha Yatras. So now tell me, how many of you would like to have a son who is like Shravan Kumar? Just a raise of hand. I can see you all on the screen. How many of you want to have a son who is like Shravan Kumar? Now my second question to you. Mataji, would you like to have a husband who is like Shravan Kumar? No, husband shouldn't be like Shravan Kumar. Because if your husband is like Shravan Kumar, he keeps asking everything to his mother and he doesn't ask you, then you are like, no, I don't want to have husband who is like Shravan Kumar, but I want to have a son who is like Shravan Kumar. So you're just contradicting yourself. So you're not even sure what you want. You're not even sure who is your ideal. So that's the problem. So I was just contemplating on this sloka and thinking that, how come Kashyap Muni got so much time and we didn't? We aren't getting time. It's just because we are not sure what we want. If our goal is fixed, if we are clear about what we want, then the path is not very difficult, right? It's not very difficult. It's not about which ashram we are in. Kashyap Muni was not a sannyasi. He was a grihastha. But it's just about what is your goal in that ashram. Like for example, I've seen there are brahmacharis who enter into brahmachari ashram with a goal to become grihastha. They think, no, in future I have to become grihastha. That's their goal. And I've seen some exalted grihasthas who enter into grihastha ashram with a goal to become a sannyasi. They are like, I finish up my duties on, you know, this time, and this is what I'm going to do. They plan and program the whole thing. And this is where I see myself after 30 years or after 20 years. So though they are in grihastha ashram, but their whole goal is, how do I get to vanaprastha, or how do I get to sannyas? So I thought this sloka was very inspiring, that when he could do it with 17 wives, why can't we do it? We have just such a small family, husband, wife, maybe one kid, two kid, or maximum three kids. That means we like Abhimanyus, you know, we like Abhimanyu, he just entered the Chakravyuh, but he didn't know how to come out. So we know how to enter the grihastha ashram, but we don't know the way out. So till the fag end of life, people are being attached to wife and children and grandchildren and grand. They just don't know how to come out. So we need to hear the scriptures and know the way out of this, right? That means somewhere we need to review and reprogram our lives, right? So coming to the second sloka, Kashyap Muni, he enters the ashram and then he sees the whole atmosphere is very sad and his wife is also looking very morose. And then in the second sloka, Sukadev Goswami says that Mother Aditi, she offered a seat to Kashyap Muni very politely, very respectfully, and you know, gave him a proper seat and proper respect. And then Kashyap Muni starts his conversation. And I thought this was also one very important thing that we can learn from this sloka, is that you can imagine the situation now Aditi is going through. Okay, she's in a bad situation. Her children are homeless. Bali Maharaj has occupied the Indrapuri. They don't know where to go. And in such a situation, her husband walks in. And she doesn't show her frustration to him. She's so kind, she's so polite, and she's so respectful. And I was just meditating that, how come? You see, nowadays, I mean, all of us, if a little provocating situation and we will burst out, right? Now imagine, forget about children being homeless. Even if our domestic maid, you know, our servant doesn't turn up, we will take it out on our husband. The moment he walks in from the office, and by mistake, if the poor fellow asks for a glass of water, he's finished. Because you tell him, you're asking me for a glass of water? My servant has not come today. I washed the clothes, I cleaned the vessel, I picked up the children from home. I did all this, and then you come home and ask me water. I mean, we'll just take out the whole frustration on him just because our servant is not at home. Now imagine Aditi, the whole situation she is in. Her children are homeless. They've changed forms and they're hiding here and there. And here is Kashyap Muni. He walks in and she doesn't burst out. Oh, you have come. I want to tell you so many things. Sit down. This is what happened with our children. Nothing. She first offers him respect and offers him a seat to sit down. And I thought that was amazing. If it's us, the first thing is we will taunt him on his devotion. Yeah, yeah, you go to your temple, huh? You complete your rounds and you do your seva. This is what you keep doing. This is so much issue happening and you're not bothered. You see, we'll start with all these things. I'm taking the liberty to very openly discuss this matters here today because we are all in a, this is a Vaishnavi group, and this is a regular thing that happens in every householder, you know, family life. But here she is in a provocating situation. She's so polite. She's so respectful. And she's not forgetting what she's supposed to do and how she's supposed to address her husband. And I thought, how do we go about it? What are we supposed to do to come to that level? That means we need to prepare ourselves all through so that any time in our life when there are provocating situations, we can keep a proper balance of our minds, right? Because, you see, I'll tell you a story. There was once a man who had a farmhouse next to the ocean, you know, very, very close to the ocean. And that area was a storm-prone area, you know, a lot of storms all the time. So he was not getting any servants because every time they do all the arrangements and the storm comes and just destroys everything. So he was going on looking for some servants. And this time he got one man. He said, fine, I'm ready to work in your farmhouse, but I have a condition. I don't work when there is storm, but other days I work. Now this man was like, anyway, I'm not getting any servants, so it's all right. At least you will work on other days. You please join. So now this man started working in his farmhouse, and there were horses and, you know, barn, lots of grain, storerooms, and he was doing a good job. Now one day it so happened that it was thundering, I mean storms and thunder, a big cyclone, it's raining. And so then in the middle of the night, the owner of this farmhouse gets up and he runs to his servant and he knocks the door. Get up, you know, come out, it's raining, you know, we need to tie up things, you know. This servant, he says, sorry sir, when you employed me, I told you I will work every day, but I will not work on the day there is storm. This man is all upset. Why did I even hire him? It's all right. You sleep. I'll just do myself. So then he just runs to the stable and he sees that the horses are all tied properly and perfectly. And then he runs to the storeroom and he sees all the grains are kept very safely. And then he runs to other places to check out what's happening. And he sees everything is so well organized. There be big weights put on the shed so that they don't fly off when the, you know, when the air blows, wind blows. Everything was so perfectly done that there was nothing needed to be done. So then this owner also goes home and, you know, goes to his room and takes rest. And then he understands, oh, why did my servant say that I don't work when it rains? Because he doesn't need to, because he's been working all the time so perfectly. So I was thinking, this is something which we need to adapt in our life. We do our sadhana, we do our vanchan, we do our chanting, hearing. We focus on our behavior, the way we talk, walk, speak, so much so that during favorable times, and we train our minds such a way that when an unfavorable situation comes up in our life, we are well prepared to face it. We are well prepared to face it, right? So if we train ourselves during favorable situations, then when provocating situations come up in our life, we'll be able to act soberly, right? So like you see, especially ladies, all of us, we have a habit of using certain masalas very frequently in our kitchen. Like you see, you use turmeric, salt, red chili powder. These are regular ones. But there are some masalas which you don't use regularly. Now what happens when you don't use something regularly, it just goes back in your kitchen. And the masalas which you use regularly, they are all lined up in the front. And sometimes it so happens that you end up going and buying those masalas again from the grocery store because they went so much behind in the rack, you don't even know that those masalas exist in your kitchen. Now the same thing happens with our swabhavas. If we are used to using a certain type of vocabulary, behavior, reactions, regular basis, then we become so used to that in every situation we keep using it. Right? That means we need to work on what kind of behavior are we practicing in our day-to-day life. This is not something which is going to happen overnight. That means the way we behave with devotees or with the outsiders, the same way we need to behave with the Vaishnavas, with the devotees residing in our house. If we practice it, then we'll be able to have our inside and outside same. Then we will not need mask. We'll be ready to face any provocating situations. Because what we have filled in us is what is going to spill out during provocating situations. Like say for example, we're just walking around with a mug of tomato soup and just somebody just comes and pushes you. What happens? The tomato soup spills out. Now somebody may say that the tomato soup spilled out because this person pushed me. But the actual answer is the tomato soup spilled out because that was what was there inside the mug. If there was a corn soup in the mug, corn soup would have spilled out. If it was a tomato soup will spill out. Whatever is there inside is what is going to come out. See, imagine, somebody just comes and pushes you. There are two ways of reacting. One way is you just go all out and say, how dare you? Can't you see properly? Can't you walk properly? And there is one way of reacting. You say, that's all right. It happens. There are lots of people here and we can understand. There's lots of crowd. That's all right. So there are two ways of reacting to the same situation. That means you bring out what is there inside you. Right? Now we see Aditi is in a very provocating situation. I mean, nobody would have questioned if she would have burst out in front of her husband, but she still maintains her stability, maintains her good qualities, and she very, very respectfully approaches her husband and gives him a seat. So I thought this whole conversation, this whole chapter gives so many good lessons of how can we behave as a grihastha. How should be a relation between a husband and wife? What is the ideal behavior? Then coming to the sloka number 4, Kashyap Muni starts his conversation and he very lovingly addresses his wife. He says, "Oh, gentle one," he asks that, "How come the situation is like this in the ashram? Has something inauspicious happened in regards to the religious principle, in regards to the brahmanas, or in regards to people in general?" And I thought this was also so beautiful, giving us such great lessons, because he directly didn't ask, "Oh, my dear wife, how are you?" Or he didn't ask, "Our children are okay? Is everything fine?" No, he asked, "Are the brahmanas fine? Are the religious principles being followed? Are the subjects, everybody, jana samanya, is everybody fine?" And I thought, the saintly people, they're so intelligent. Whenever they see a problem, they don't see the problem on the surface. They will see the cause of the problem. If you have a boil on your skin, one way of sorting out is you just put some sophromycin, you just put some ice. But the better way of doing it is to go for a blood report. Why is the boil coming out? That means there must be some impurity in the blood. Just take some safi and you get a good blood. So the saintly people, they don't look at the outside problem. Why is my wife sad? The cause of everything is when people are disconnected to Krishna. The cause of all misfortune is when people don't follow religious principles. The cause of all inauspiciousness is when the brahmanas are not treated properly. So he knows this very well, and he is very, very clear about it. So he directly points out to the cause of the problem. He doesn't ask about the external symptoms. How come you are sad, my dear wife? No, no. Are the religious principles not being followed? Directly points out, you know. And I thought that was one very beautiful thing which is also something to do with our present situation of this lockdown and coronavirus, because we can't live a self-centered life. We are part of a whole program, of this whole thing in nature. That means if somebody somewhere does a mistake, definitely it affects everybody. The whole society is interconnected. Like what happened with us? Somebody somewhere in some country ate something which they are not supposed to eat. And then a disease comes in to them. And then it spreads to everybody. And then everybody's life is disturbed. So we are not individual units. It's like this society is a whole unit. So anything somebody does wrong, everybody gets affected. That means we can't live a selfish, self-centered life. We have to live a life which is all accommodating. We have to live a life, or rather I would say we have to pray and wish well for everybody in this world. Only then we can be happy. Because if the whole world remains happy, then we are happy because we are part of this world. Right? So see, like for example, we say that we are preaching Krishna consciousness. Right? We are told by Prabhupada that everybody must preach about Krishna. Now sometimes when we are preaching, we think we are doing favor to others. Oh my God, they are conditioned souls, they don't know about Krishna, they are not Krishna conscious. I'm helping them by preaching. But frankly, we are just helping ourselves. Because if they are not Krishna conscious, then they commit sinful activities. If they commit sinful activities, then, you know, if they exploit nature, if they don't follow the rules of nature, then everybody is suffering. But let's say we all preach very nicely. And let's say everybody becomes devotees and everybody has Krishna in the center of their life. Everybody eats Krishna prasadam. Everybody leaves a sattvic life, not exploiting nature. And everybody is God-centered. Then what happens? All of us as a result will be happy. That means when we are preaching Krishna consciousness, we are not helping anybody. Actually, we are just helping ourselves because we want to live happily. And if we want to live happily, then the society has to be happy. Then everybody will be happy, right? It's as simple as that. So then with the saintly people, when they used to pray that, you know, Vasudeva Kutumbam, everybody is a one family. Sarvo Sukhino Bhavantu, Sarve Sukhino Bhavantu, all should be happy, all should be happy. So when they were praying like this, they're very smart because they know if everybody is happy, you know, imagine everybody is a Krishna devotee, everybody is doing Harinam, everybody is chanting, then there will be rains, the grains will grow, people will have beautiful lifestyles, everything will flourish, people will be so happy. So that means when we are thinking about, you know, others' well-being, we are actually, you know, indirectly just taking care of ourselves. Or we're just being nice to ourselves, right? So here he just very happily, because you see, every problem that we are facing in this world, if you just take it, it's just because of our disconnection with Krishna. It's just because of our not following religious principle. Now if I tell you, just close your eyes for a minute and just think about any problem on random in your life. Any problem. You will understand that the source of that problem is not being connected to Krishna. Right? Just think about any problem. You know, close your eyes and just think about any one problem. Let's say for example, you are facing a problem of teenage children. My children don't listen to me. Let's say. Now again, that is because you're not connected to Krishna. Why? Because you're not laying down proper rules in the house. Probably you're not a good example for your children. Probably you don't follow yourself, so they don't learn from you. Probably you're not able to come up with that atmosphere in the house. You're not feeding them Krishna prasad. These may be so many underlying problems. Let's say somebody says, "Well, I have a problem with health." Again, that also comes back of you not being connected to Krishna. Either in this life or in the previous life or some karma. you know, or you don't have a regulated life, you're not following proper, you know, either you're doing maybe atyahara, you know, you're not doing things. So everything again comes back of not following religious principle. Let's say somebody has a financial law. So let's say somebody is not doing well in their business. Again, you can also connect that of not being connected to Krishna. Maybe you're not giving charities, maybe you're not doing any good karmas. So then it doesn't come back, because whatever you do just comes back to you. So probably you're not even doing good karmas. So you see, if you just close your eyes and think about any problem on random, it is because you're not connected to Krishna. That means we need to be connected to Krishna. That's the solution. That's the only solution for all the problems that we face in this world. Right? But even if it's Adi Devik, Adi Atmik, Adi Bhautik, there are no rains. Why? Because there's no Harinam. There are earthquakes. Why? Because the Mother Earth is unhappy, doing so much sinful activities. So then here, Kashyap Muni asking Aditi is so apt. You know, he doesn't ask, why are you sad? He asks, are the religious principles not being followed? Are the Brahmanas not being, you know, are the people in general? He's just pointing the right thing, because he knows if there is something wrong here, then there is something wrong here. There is a direct connection, right? Then you go to the next sloka where, you know, he asks his wife, he says that, are you not doing your Mangalarati properly? Are you not chanting your rounds properly? That's what he's trying to say. Are you not following all the rules of the household life? Are there some discrepancies, you know? And he just addresses her as Griha Medhini, you know, somebody who is very attached to the house. So he said, because of your too much attachment to your household activities, are you ignoring your spiritual activities? You know, very straightforward question he asks her. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about household life is not a license for sense enjoyment. It is just to help you to advance in your spiritual understanding. And I thought that was so beautiful point. Sometimes we take things for granted. I'm a householder. This is allowed, that is allowed, you know. So many concessions. I was just contemplating the other day that there is Brahmachari ashram, there is Sannyasi ashram, there is Grahastha ashram, there is Vanaprastha. Now, at the end of the life, all the four ashrams have the aim to go back to Goloka. Now, the householders, they have their children, grandchildren, house, properties, assets, they eat food, wear clothes, shop, move around, go for yatra. This is so much... so much concessions given to them. And here is Brahmachari life, it's a celibate life, simple lifestyle, simple food, simple clothes, and the same applies for sannyasis. Now how can that be possible, that somebody is so austere and does everything so austerely, at the end of the life he gets a chance to go back to Goloka, and here we are householders and we also get a chance to go back to Goloka. How can both of them have same destination? You know, these people are, you know, in this ashram doing all the sense control. And here is a householder, you know, who has a license for certain sense gratification. And even he goes back to Goloka. How can that be possible? That means we are missing the point somewhere. It's not that easy. Probably we are missing something between lines. That means in the householder life, we need to work harder. But we actually doing other way around, you know. We've been taught, you can eat whatever you want to, just offer it to Krishna, it's all right. You know, you can do whatever, you just keep Krishna in center. And then we just take these concessions, we just take advantage of these concessions, we just exploit these concessions given. But these concessions are given to us because we opted for it, because we were not convinced that we can handle this journey alone. This is something like, we are all on a journey and we said, I need a companion on this journey. That's about it. So we've been given a companion, a help, a partner, so that together we go up into Krishna consciousness. And we shouldn't take advantage of this license given to us. Because if that is what is our destination, then we really need, because imagine we're not doing any austerities, right? We don't do any tapasyas. The only tapasya we do is probably Ekadashi, or maybe some Chaturmas, or maybe Damodar month, or sometimes Nirjala, or fasting on the, maybe some tithis. That's about it. That's all austerity we do. So that means we really need to see householder life is something like a knife which has two-sided knife. If you do everything well, oh, this is amazing. You don't have to, like Prabhupada said to many householder disciples, you don't have to take sannyas, you're doing very well. So happily, husband, wife, children, they can pray together and go back home, back to Godhead, you know, very happily. If you do things, if you get things right, if you get this formula right, but if it's other way around, instead of taking your partner as a partner in Krishna consciousness, if you start getting too attached to the other side of it, materially attached to material goods and material things, and you don't get things right, then it's a big mess you are in, you know. So there's two ways. That one is it's helpful, but at the same time there is always risk of getting too much attached, right? And losing the goal of, you know, losing the goal of your journey. So I thought this was very, very important point where he addresses her as Griha Medini. I mean, it's just like warning. I hope you're not becoming a Griha Medini, just too much attached to your house and, you know, ignoring your spiritual practices. We all know the story of how Indra became a pig when he was cursed by Brihaspati, and then he didn't want to go back to Indrapuri, even though he was requested by the devatas, and he said, no, I have my little piglets, and I have my little, you know, my wife, my pig wife, and my piglets, and just see, the fresh stool is being poured out, you know, near the trash, and I need to just go and have it, so I don't think I want to come back to Indrapuri. So, we shouldn't put ourselves in that kind of situation that, you know, we are on this journey and we've been given partner to help, but it's not that we just get stuck here thinking that this is the, you know, the do-all and, you know, of our lives. So we need to be careful, you know, otherwise we'll become like those wife of Tukaram. I'm just reminded of how Tukaram tells his wife, you know, that the Viman has come from Vaikuntha to take us, so let's go. And Tukaram's wife is like, you know, who's going to take care of my buffalo? You know, you go to Vaikuntha. I need to take care of my buffalo, because if I come with you, who's going to make my buffalo take bath? You know, because she had that buffalo, you know, her mother gave it to her and she was very attached. And then Tukaram says, all right, I'm going. And she's like, all right, bye-bye, just, you know, farewell, because I need to take care of my buffalo. So sometimes I wonder, we shouldn't end up doing that, you know, because there is a goal of human life and we shouldn't end up, you know, we may be having our own buffaloes. We may not have literally a buffalo, but there may be some things like this in our life which we are very attached to, right? Like a couple of years ago, there was this very beautiful article in Back to Godhead magazine about who is your dear, you know? The article said that how Sita Mata was attracted by deer, you know, and then because she was attracted by deer, she had to have separation from Lord Ram. And then it talks about how Bharat Maharaj, he got attracted to a deer and he had to take again birth as a deer and Jada Bharata. And then he talks about Dashrath Maharaj, how he wanted to hunt a deer, and then he thought it's a deer, and then he puts the arrow, but it's not deer, it's Shravan Kumar. And then Shravan Kumar curses him that you will get separation from your son. So then he just drew comparisons that, you know, Sita Mata also, because of the deer, she got separated, and Dashrath Maharaj got separated because of the deer with Ram, and Bharat Maharaj got away from spiritual practices. So who is your deer was his question. Who is your deer? Now, deer literally doesn't mean this D-E-E-R, deer. It may also mean who is your deer, D-E-A-R. That means who is that about whom you are very attached to? Are you always thinking about? Are you always worried that you may, you know, lose the person? And who is the one whose affection is going to keep you in this material world? You need to check yourself. Whom am I so attached to? Who may just keep me around here in the material world for some more time, right? We need to have that introspection. So because as grahasthas, it's very natural for us to get attached to our family members, you know. So I thought that was one very, very, very nice point. And then, of course, this topic by itself is so huge. And then in the next sloka, he talks about, Kashyap Muni asked him, what about the guest? Did you treat the guest properly? You know, he talks about the actual guest, means uninvited, like we rightly call them, atithi, you know, who have come uninvited, or we were not prepared to receive them, right? Tithi is a particular date. You come on a tithi. A tithi is somebody who comes uninvited without informing you a date. And then this is the next question he asks. You know, first he asks, how are the brahmanas? Are you following the religious principles? And then he asks that, you know, are you not following properly your spiritual practices because of too much attachment with the household activities? And then the third question he asks that, probably you didn't treat the guest properly. Was it the case? He's asking her. And I thought this was also a very good point, which I would like to emphasize on, because we are all grihasthas, matajis, and I think this is one of our department where we need to take care of the guests who come home very nicely. Because this, you see, just like you have Vaishnav Seva, you have Tulsi Seva, you have Vigraha Seva, you have Guru Seva, you have something called Atithi Seva, which needs to be done properly, right? In fact, in Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 5, they talk about different types of hell, in which there is a talk about one hell which is called Krima Bhojana Naraka. So the people who don't feed the guests who have come home properly, you know, they just eat themselves, they are sent to this hell called Krima Bhojana. And there they will be given a body which will be eaten by Krima, you know, the insects and worms will eat their body. So they have to be so careful when a guest comes, you feed the guest properly. And then there is another hell, it's called Paryavartana. And that hell is for people who look at the guests scornfully. Something like, oh my God, this time of the day, how do you appear this time of the day? How can you come now? You know, if you have that kind of an attitude when you look at the guests, oh, I was just going out for shopping and these people drop in. If you give that kind of a look to the guest, then you are sent to this hell, which is called Paryavartana. And in that hell, what happens? In that hell, the hawks and the different kind of cruel birds, they just come and they just take off your eyes, you know, and you are in pain. You know, this is what is described in the fifth canto. For more details, you can read there. So these are the different kinds of hells if you don't take care of the guest. So that is why you see in the olden days when people made house, you know, apart from the master bedroom, children bedroom, they always had a guest bedroom, you know, because the atithis, there has to be some arrangement for the atithis. They need to be given a proper place, you know, proper respect, proper food, right? According to one's capacity. There's no hard and fast that, you know, you cannot go beyond your capacity. Something like, you see in Krishna Leela, there is a story of how when Krishna goes to Mithila, Bahulashava, king also welcomes Krishna, and Shrutadev also welcomes Krishna, and both of them treat Krishna or host Krishna according to their own capacity. Bahulashava is a king, so he does it with all, you know, all luxuries. And Shrutadev is a poor Brahmin. He doesn't even have kusha grass or a mat, so he borrows it from his neighbor and gives it to Krishna. But Krishna is happy. According to one's capacity, one need to serve the guest. Right, like Prabhupada said, actually the grihasthas is supposed to call out three times, anybody hungry, anybody hungry, anybody hungry, and then if nobody responds, then you eat. Of course, I don't know how much practically you can do it now, but definitely there are ways you can do it. You can feed Vaishnavas, at least on special tithis, on, you know, there are ways to do it, right? So we first give bhojana to atithi, we feed them. And see, even if you see Krishna in his own life, you know, he has given us examples of how to treat the guests. If you see how Krishna treated Sudama, oh my God, he was so kind, though he was a king, but he was so nice to Sudama. If you see how Krishna treated Bhrigumuni, though Bhrigumuni was not nice to Krishna, he kicked Krishna, but Krishna was so kind to Bhrigumuni because Bhrigumuni was a guest, right? In fact, in the 10th canto, chapter 64, there is a conversation where Krishna is telling to the Yadu Kumaras, he says, my dear boys, you should be very respectful to a Brahmana, even if the Brahmana criticizes you, curses you, no matter whatever way he behaves with you, you should always be respectful to the Brahmanas. Yeah, there is a mention there. And he says that, oh my dear followers, you know, he is addressing them. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in his commentary that means if you are not treating Brahmanas or not treating your guests properly, that means you are not followers of Krishna. Because if you are followers of Krishna, then you have to treat the Brahmanas or the guests nicely. You see, that's our Vedic culture. Even if you see in the Mahabharata, there is a story of how Bhima and Arjuna and Krishna, they go to Jarasandha, right? And they're fighting every single day with Jarasandha. There is a wrestling match going on. But at the end of the day, when the match is over, Jarasandha is so kind to them, giving them all kinds of nice preparations, food, all arrangements, because they were Jarasandha's guest. So Jarasandha, even though he was so demoniac, he had this sense that we need to be nice to our guest. He didn't want to do aparad. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to be, though again, next day morning, they're all ready to fight. You know, and then that war goes on for, and it was not some friendly war. It was a war where there was do or die. There was Jarasandha supposed to kill Bhima, or Bhima is supposed to kill Jarasandha. That's about it. That's going to be the end. But still, he was so nice to them. Even if you see Duryodhan, when Arjuna came to, you know, in Duryodhan's tent during the Kurukshetra war, Duryodhan was so nice to him. Oh, Arjuna, please come, have a seat. How can I help you? What can I do for you? If you want, I can give you the whole kingdom. What is your desire? Please let me know. So that was our culture. That was our culture. You see, King Rantidev, we see how he was fasting for 48 days. But when he had guests, he was first ready to offer food to them. We see in the case of Shibi Chakravarti, the pigeon had come to his shelter and he was ready to give up his own flesh just to protect the pigeon from the hawk. See, amazing. We see so many pastimes. How the guests are supposed to be treated. And also, on contrary, we see cases where the guests were not treated properly, and then what was the end of those stories, right? We see how Romaharsha was not respectful to Balaram as soon as Balaram enters, and then he was killed. We see how Parikshit Maharaj was not treated well. I mean, he was not given due respect. Of course, it's a different story. I'm just trying to take something from those stories. And then he was all upset, and then again he got cursed, and the whole thing happened because he didn't respect the guest. Parikshit Maharaj was not respected by Shamik Rishi, even though he was Shamik Rishi was the Brahmana and Parikshit Maharaj is a Kshatriya, but because Parikshit Maharaj was a guest at his ashram, he's supposed to offer him proper respects, right? So we see in the case of Indradyumna Maharaj, though he was in tapasya, he was not aware that Agastya Muni is walking in, but that was expected. That was the high standard expected in those days, that he's supposed to get up, and because Agastya is a Brahmana, welcome him, because Agastya came to his hut wherever Indradyumna Maharaj was practicing his austerity or tapasya. Right? We also see in the case of Romapad Maharaj. You know, in Ramayana, so how Romapad Maharaj had a guest home, and at that time he was busy in giving some charity, and then he gives some charity to this guest, and then the very next moment he thinks maybe this is not suitable for him, and he just takes it back. And because of doing that, not treating the guest well, then for 12 years there is famine in his kingdom. And then we all know how Rishi Shringa comes, and then the whole thing happens. And then the rains come. But what I'm trying to tell you is that, the guests need to be treated very warmly, right? Very respectfully. And Prabhupada was saying in many places that if you have nothing, at least you can give a smile, be respectful to them, and offer a seat. And if you're very poor, just pay obeisance to them and say, sorry, I don't have anything to offer to you, but at least offer sweet words, right? So this is one very, very important lesson that we understand by the conversation between Mother Aditi and Kashyap Muni, where he is emphasizing that, are you taking care of the guest, right? In fact, in the Skanda Puran, it says that there are 6 Vaishnava Parads, and very, very gross ones, and out of that one is when you don't smile at Vaishnava. If you see a Vaishnava and you're not happy to receive them, or if you don't smile, that is also an aparad, right? So we have to be so careful. I was reminded of this story of how Ramanujacharya had this 2 disciples. He had Yagnesh, and he had one more disciple who was, I'm not recollecting the name, he was poor. And he has that Yagnesh was quite rich. So Ramanujacharya, he's supposed to go to their place where they stay. And before he goes there, he sends his disciples, you know, inform them that I'm coming. And I just hope I got the names right. And he says, go, I think it was Yagnesh. He says, inform them that I'm coming. So then these disciples, they go to this rich man's house and says, you know, Guru Maharaj is going to come. And this man is so happy. Oh, really? Such a good news you gave me. You know, he's really very happy. And then they go to this poor man, and then they inform him, you know, Guru Maharaj is coming. And this poor man is also very happy. And then when they come back to Ramanujacharya, they tell him that we have informed both of them. But how will you be present in both of them, you know, both of their houses, you know, where do you plan to go? So then Ramanujacharya says, no, I won't be going to both the houses. I have just put a test on them. So the disciple says, what is the test? So then Ramanujacharya goes on asking, he says that when you went to this rich man's house, what did he do? Then the disciples say, well, we just told him that you are coming, and he was very happy, and he started calling all his servants and telling them, start making preparations, my guru is coming. He started putting toranas and rangolis and making the list of what items he's going to feed you. Amazing, Guru Maharaj, he was so happy to receive you. And then Ramanujacharya asked a question, but how did he treat you? So then said, what does that mean? No, no. Did he offer you a seat? Did he offer you some water? Did he offer you some sweet words? And they were like, no, no. He was so excited with the news that he didn't offer us any, you know, nothing. He was just so excited. And then Ramanujacharya asked about the second disciple. It was a poor man. And he says, what did he do? So then this disciple says, Guru Maharaj, he was also very happy when he came to know that you are going to come. So he was very happy, and then he said that you are the ones who brought this good news. Please have a seat. Please take some water. We are very poor. We can't offer you much, but you have to accept something from our house. And they were so nice to us. You know, they were. So then Ramanujacharya said, I will go to their house because they offered you, you know, respects. So because this is how a Vaishnava is supposed to be, you know. The moment you see a Vaishnava, you know, you pay obeisances, you offer some sweet words, you smile. This is how they deal. Said, I'll go to their house, you know. So I thought this was so nice lesson for all of us too, right? It's not that we just need to have relation with the deities. We need to have relation with the devotees. Because you can make Krishna happy, you know, only if his devotees are happy. Tad bhakta, if his bhaktas, if his devotees are happy, right? You see, even in Srimad Bhagavatam, in many places you see in the 3rd canto, chapter 16, sloka number 8, when this pastime happens about the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha being cursed by the Kumaras, and Lord comes running, you know, and he just asks forgiveness to the 4 Kumaras that, oh, my guards have mistreated you. And there in that sloka, he mentions that I'm so attached to Brahmanas, I'm so attached to devotees. And he says that for them, I'm ready to do anything. And one way to please them is if you offer them foods which is made up of ghee. And he said when that ghee goes to their mouth, it's more happy than when you put the ghee in the fire sacrifice. And then even in the chapter 5, canto 5, chapter 5, sloka number 23, Rishabh Dev Maharaj is speaking to his son. And there also he says the same thing, that Lord is more happy. I'm more happy when the Brahmanas are fed food instead of, you know, the oblations in the fire. And you see the same thing Prithu Maharaj tells his subjects, his citizens, that Brahmanas should be, you know. So everywhere in Bhagavatam we hear this, everywhere, in all around, that the devotees should be fed nicely, devotees should be respected nicely, right? Where the devotees are respected, they are fed nicely, then we have their blessings. And I was thinking, one more thing just came in my mind is that, why do we have to treat atithis or devotees nicely? One very logical point I was thinking is, let's say, this is our house, okay, and we have servants. And a guest comes to our house, what are the servants supposed to do? Can the servant mistreat our guest? No, they can't, because it's our house. They can't mistreat our guest, because they are our guest. So they cannot do whatever they want to, right? So similarly, I was thinking that as devotees, we understand that this is not our house. It is Krishna's house. Everything belongs to Krishna. And we are just servants of Krishna. And those people who are coming to our house are not coming to our house, which we think is our house. It's actually Krishna's house. So if a guest is coming to Krishna's house, how can we as a servant mistreat the guest of the master? So definitely it's going to be aparad. So that is why maybe we are in trouble if we do that. Because we don't have that right to mistreat somebody else's guest, right? They're not our guest. They're Krishna's guest. So we have to be so very careful, right? I remember in my childhood, this is a very funny joke. I read in the Tinkle Digest, you know, there used to be a small book. And there was a story of this one Brahmana who was so attached to feeding all the Vaishnavas and feeding all the other Brahmanas that whenever he goes anywhere, you know, he goes to a marketplace or he goes for shopping, wherever he sees some Brahmana, he'll say, "Can you come to my house for prasadam? Can you come to my house for prasadam?" So his wife was all vexed up, you know, every day we have guests at home and I have to cook. So she got a very beautiful idea. So what did she do one day? As the daily routine goes, you know, early in the morning, there were some 4 or 5 Brahmanas. "Is this the house of Mr. So-and-so?" Then said, "Yes." "Oh, your husband met us at the marketplace and he asked us to come and have prasadam." So his wife was all vexed up and she said, yeah, definitely. Please come, sit down. And then what she does, she gets hot iron rods, heated iron rods. And then as these guests are sitting on the, you know, sofa or whatever chair, she just very humbly tells them, "Sadhu Maharaj or Sadhu Ji, can you just move a little bit? I need to put these hot iron rods below the sofa." And the sadhus are like, "Why do you have these rods? What do you do with these rods? Why do you want to keep them here?" And then she says, "Well, you are sadhus. I don't want to hide anything from you. But you know, my husband has this habit. After he feeds the Brahmana's stomach full, he just beats them with hot iron rods, you know, every day. He has this habit. Now, seeing all of your, you know, faces, you're all highly elevated soul, I don't want you should get that beating. So that is why before he even comes, you know, I'm just hiding those hot iron rods below the sofa so he doesn't see them. You don't worry. Nothing will happen. I'm there now. So please sit down. I'll just go and cook something." And these Brahmanas were like, "Sorry, we don't want to eat anything in your house. We need to go." No, please don't do that. If my husband comes home, he'll be so sad. Not, you know, if you don't eat here, please stay." And they're like, "Sorry, you know, we don't want to eat anything at your house." And they start running away. And at that very moment, the husband enters the house. And then he's like, "Why are these sadhus going away?" He just asks his wife, "Did you mistreat them?" And his wife is like, no, I didn't mistreat them. It's just that, you know, we have this old iron rods in our house. And the sadhus were insisting that they want those rods. Now, I being an obedient wife, how can I give them those rods without asking your permission? So I told them, "Sorry, I can't give it unless I ask my husband." And they got all upset. "If you don't give me these rods, I'm going." So they just left. You know, what should I do? And the husband were like, "You stupid woman. Just this old iron rods, you're supposed to give them, you know, they're Brahmanas." So he immediately takes those rods and he runs behind those Brahmanas. Take them, you know, why are you going away? And these Brahmanas are like, "My God, we are saved, you know, the wife was right. Just see, he wants to come and beat us with this hot iron rods." And that was the end of the story. And after that, no Brahmanas ever entered their house for prasadam. So I just thought I'll end it with a joke here. We don't want to do that. We want to be nice host. We want to serve the Brahmanas. We want to serve the Vaishnavas. We want to be good Vaishnavas. We want their blessings. Right? As it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhakta Pada Dhuli Ar, Bhakta Pada Jal, Bhakta Bhukta Avashesha Tina Mahabal. only three strengths that we can gain in our spiritual life is bhakta pada dhuli, the dust from the lotus feet of a devotee, the water which has washed the feet of a devotee, and uchishta, after the devotee consumes food, the remnants, if we can consume them, these are the three only shelter of a devotee. So I thought this one very important lesson that we can draw from this episode is that we need to be nice hosts, nice Vaishnavas, we should serve the Brahmanas nicely. As Grihasthas, we can't be self-centered and selfish. Grihasthas are the ones who have to serve the other classes. We have to serve the Brahmacharis, we have to serve the Sannyasis, and in turn we get blessings from them. So we just can't keep thinking about, you know, only our family. As Grihasthas, we have a huge responsibility. You know, Vasudeva Kutumbam, we have to take care of everybody. Not only that, you know, we won't be able to take the slokas further because of the time restrictions, but if you see in the further slokas, he'll be telling them, are the beggars fine? Are your servants fine? Did you take care of the, you know, even the beggars and servants, are you taking care of them properly? Right? Even in Srila Prabhupada's life, we see how Prabhupada's father, Gaur Mohan De, used to keep prasadam for the rats in his cloth store. So as a grihasthas, we have responsibility towards everybody. Everybody. Sarve sukhino bhavat. Everybody should be fed. According to our capacity. I'm not saying, you know, how much we can do. But according to our capacity, we should feed everybody. Whatever is possible. Right? I remember as a young girl, my father had this habit. Whenever he used to take prasadam in his plate, every day, in my whole childhood, I've seen this. The first morsel, the first piece of chapati, he will dip it in dal and then and the curry and whatever is there in his, you know, and little rice, and then he'll put that separately in a dish, and then he'll start eating, and then after he washes his hand, he would just go and put that in the balcony of our kitchen. And I see sometimes a crow used to come. I mean, almost every day a crow comes, and then he just picks it up. And then my father used to say that he's doing that for the pitrus, you know, just sending it, you know. And I thought it was beautiful. Of course, when we were children, then we never understood this. But now when I reflect on those, I thought it was amazing. As a grihasthas, we have responsibility towards everybody. I remember as children, our daily routine was, you know, in the morning. Though we were so lazy to do it, but we were insisted by our parents, you know. We used to go on the terrace of our house and put food for the pigeons. It was fun also. You just put those grains all over, and the pigeons used to come and eat them. And then I remember my father going every day to a temple nearby where he used to distribute, you know, some upma prasadam to the orphans. And so I thought it was so beautiful. I mean, grihastha life is taking care of, you know, the needy, the poor, the brahmanas, everybody, right? And I remember my mother during the Dwadashis, and the next day of Ekadashi, we used to have a Brahmin coming to our house. After some time, he got a paralyzed attack, and then his wife used to come. And she used to come with a bag, and we never gave them cooked food, but we used to give them atta and dal and rice, and then the 51 rupees. And then she used to have all those small boxes where she used to put all this atta and then rice and then dal and then salt and then, you know, and then she used to go to the next house. And every Dwadashi, we used to do it without fail. And when I came to class 9, then my mother asked me to do it. Initially, I used to see her doing it, and I thought it was really beautiful. So I think as parents, we need to put that in our children, you know, we need to cultivate that. If we do it, our children will do it, you know. We'll do it. Like I remember as children, when we celebrated our birthdays, we used to go to the hospitals, orphanages, you know, give something. It was cultivated naturally. But of course, now we celebrate birthdays in a different way. Nowadays, birthdays means children expect gift. But when we were young, we were taught that birthday means you have to give gift. So I remember we used to have a competition between me and my younger sister, who's going to give more on his birthday. Hey, you distributed to 2 hospitals, 3 orphanages. I did it to 5. And that was our competition we used to have. Who's going to do more? Because that's how we were trained. But now we're training our children the other way around. What do you want for your birthday is what we ask our kids. And then the whole life, they just want and they want and they want. But then we need to treat them, teach them to give and give and give. And if we can cultivate that from young age, it'll become a habit. They will want to give and then give and then give. So anyway, culminating this topic here, if a grihastha can be happy, you know, only if it's, if the life is God-centered, Krishna-centered, that means between the couple, there should be the divine couple. Only then can the igrahastha life be a happy life, a happy journey back home, back to Godhead. Thank you so much. I'll end it here.
Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna lage. Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna lage. Sab Krishna.